You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Thatcher Demko, he is injured.
This is my nightmare.
Let's go, Casey Chance. Echoing around Rogers Arena. He's got the backing of the fan base. You can tell that as Forsberg gets a long shot. Tip, they score!
It'll come. They just got to breathe. You know, it's not the end of the world.
Would you say it's time for our viewers to crack each other's heads open and feast on the goo inside?
Yes, I would, Ken.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6 o'clock on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintec Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today we are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
I know the answer. The answer is Kintec. We have a big, big show ahead. You know, it was a young Ferris Bueller many moons ago that said, life moves pretty fast. And in the span of 24 hours, life here in Canuckland, it moved at a rapid breakneck speed. When we left the show yesterday, things were good. The Canucks were up 1-0 in their first round playoff series against the Preds. Thatcher Demko was still the starting goalie. Tyler Myers was fine and in the lineup. Everything was good. Lots changed overnight.
Life moves pretty fast.
Real fast, Ferris. Real fast. We got a big show.
Yesterday was the Cameron part of Ferris Bueller.
I couldn't even keep up.
Get out of bed.
Yeah. If Cameron in the modern version just had, was in bed with his phone, and his phone was just a doom scroll of things.
I'm dying, Ferris. You're not dying.
Yeah, but you know who might be? Tyler Myers? No, he just has the flu. It was a long day. We have so many things to get into. Guest list begins today at 6:30. Jeff Merrick, Hockey Night in Canada, Jeff Merrick Show, 32 Thoughts Podcast is going to join us. Lots to get into with Jeff, obviously. 7:30, former NHL defenseman, now working as a color analyst for Sportsnet 650. Brett Festerling is going to join us. He worked the post-game show last night, and he was asked, as a former player, can you try to explain to us what the heck is going on with Elias Pettersson? I want to ask Brett that exact same question today. At 7:30. 8 o'clock, Robbie Stanley is going to join us from 102.5 The Game, Nashville Sports Radio. I guess he'll be basking in the glow. I don't know how thrilled they are with how it looked aesthetically. I know all Nashville Predators fans and media are ecstatic with the fact that they got their split in Vancouver. Doesn't have to be an oil painting. Doesn't matter what it looks like. The first round series between the Preds and the Canucks is now tied at 1-1. We'll talk to Robbie Stanley about that. At 8 o'clock. We're also giving away a $100 gift card to Primetime Bridge Brewing. Best what we learned. You got to start putting them in now. The Dunbar Lumber text message in basket is already getting filled up. 650, 650 is the number. WWL is the hashtag. Beer is the emoji. Send them in. Best what we learned. $100 gift card to Primetime for a little bit of, or sorry, to Bridge Brewing for a little bit of Primetime beer. Working in reverse on the guest list. 8 o'clock, Robbie Stanley. 7:30, Brett Festerling. And 6:30, Jeff Merrick. That's what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. Oh, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened? Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. Philip Forsberg and former Canuck Anthony Beauvillier each had a goal and an assist, and the Nashville Predators, as I mentioned, even their first-round series with the Vancouver Canucks, with a 4-1 win at Game 2 at Rogers Arena on Tuesday. But really, Forsberg and Beauvillier weren't the stories. There were so many other stories. Jason, where do we begin?
Well, to sum up last night with one word, I'd have to go with frustration all around. Not only did we spend most of the days trying to digest the news of Thatcher Demko being hurt and wondering if or when he could be back and wondering if Casey DeSmith was up for the job. Then the Canucks went out and played one of, honestly, the most frustrating Canucks games I've ever witnessed. And I know people might be like, the Canucks have played some big games and lost them. And I know the stakes last night weren't as high as, say, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final or any Game 7, really. The whole thing from start to finish last night could be summed up with that one word, frustration. Let's talk about, I guess we might as well just dive in and start with the three goals that Nashville scored last night. They were all incredibly frustrating to watch. On the first one, with the game, what, barely a minute old, Quinn Hughes falls. Like, he's one of the best skaters in the world, and he gets the puck, and he just catches an edge and falls in the corner, turns it over. The puck obviously goes over to the Preds, back to the point, and then Casey DeSmith gets caught sliding the wrong way on a tipped point shot.
He went left, puck went right.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not a goalie expert, but, you know, and I realized the puck was tipped, but I don't think you can be sliding like that. Like, he's still sliding today, right? Like, he's just sliding, and, you know, like, he just overcommitted, and that's been an issue with Casey DeSmith that all the goalie experts like Laddie have brought up before. So, I mean, that's just one of them. That's just one. That's just the start. And, I mean, it was awful because the crowd was sitting there going, like, they actually had a chant.
We heard it in the intro,
right? Let's go, Casey, or whatever. Like, and then and Shorty's on the call. He's like, oh, the chant didn't work, right? And it's 1-0 right away. The second one, two Canucks, Juleson and Lindholm, try to contain two Preds in the corner. And I think they both went to the wrong guy, or Juleson left Forsberg all alone. The puck goes to Forsberg, and he's like, oh, my God, I'm in front of the net all alone here. And he beat Casey DeSmith with a really nice shot, high, roofed it. But, you know, he should have never been in that position. All of a sudden, he's coming out all alone. Two-on-two battle? You can't let one of those guys get by you all the way to the front of the net. And the third one, I don't know if this one was the worst, but it might have been the nail in the coffin for the Canucks last night. Petey, who we'll talk about, turns it over after he seemed to, I don't know, double clutch on a pass at his own blue line. DeSmith makes the first save, but goes off his shoulder right into the slot. Petey's back checking, and, you know, he'd fallen, of course, and he's trying to get back into the play, and he was there. He was back in the play. But he's puck watching and he's not picking up a man, and Colton Sissons scores on the rebound. So it's not only mistakes, but it's mistakes piling up on mistakes. And as Tocchet likes to say, you can make one mistake and make up for it, but you can't make two or three in a row and get away with it. So that's only one of the frustrating elements of last night.
A facet of frustration.
Just a facet, because, you know, if you didn't watch the game, you might sit there and be like, wow, the Canucks must have been awful. It sounds like Nashville dominated them. No. Like, that was far from the case. And although UC Saros was good, don't get me wrong, especially the stop he made on Suter in the first where he's able to get his right pad on the puck, that was an incredible save. But the Canucks let this guy off the hook so many times. Possession-wise, they dominated this game. I'm thinking about the time in the first when Petey chose to pass to Garland instead of shooting it.
Right into his shin pads.
Only problem was his pass was a foot off the ice. Or at the end of the first when Petey had a wide-open net and hooked it wide. And it wasn't just Petey. It was a lot of Petey, but it wasn't just him. The Canucks hit the post a couple of times, too, including Joshua in the third from in close with an open net. And then there were all the other missed shots. I'm just looking at the box score right now. Missed shots. 33.
That's a new playoff record for the team.
Congratulations.
Surpassing their high of their 25 in the triple overtime game against Dallas. Remember that one? We did a high 10 that night. It wasn't because they missed the 31 shots.
Yeah, well, I mean, how many periods did that go, right? You know, like...
Yeah. I'm with you.
This was just three periods. And then the Preds blocked 30 shots last night. So the Canucks had 6,000 attempts and 18 on net.
84 shot attempts, all told. The new team playoff record, surpassing a total that they had in 2011 against the San Jose Sharks.
So all told, you're sitting there going, you know, you're watching the game and you're like, the Canucks are the better team here. But a lot of this was by design for Nashville, and you have to credit the Preds for the way they've frustrated the Canucks shooters. They have gotten in passing lanes, and then more importantly, they have gotten in shooting lanes. You know, I know we're going to talk a lot about Petey today, and some people will be frustrated and text in things like, he's not trying hard enough, or his effort isn't there. He's invisible. Don't say he was invisible last night, because it'll show to me that you were not watching the game. Petey was far from invisible, and I get it. There have been games where he's not been involved enough. He hasn't had the puck on his stick, and that's frustrating. This was not one of those games where Petey was invisible. He was physically engaged right from the start. He went out there throwing the body, had the puck on his stick a ton, especially in the first. It just seemed like every decision he made with the puck was the wrong one. Mm-hmm. A few times he passed when he should have shot. But it's not like he refused to shoot. I don't want to see anyone texting in saying, the guy's got to shoot. Seven of his shots were blocked last night. Seven. Mm-hmm. You know, and then there was this giveaway that led to the Preds' third goal, coupled with his failure to tie up Sissons on the back check. You know, I've been convinced all along that Petey's biggest issue is between his ears. It's not
an empty net goal. I mean, or no goal.
It's not
a miss.
It's not a wrist injury or any sort of physical injury. He might be a little nicked up, but so are probably a bunch of players. It's not his line mates, although his line mates could be better. He's got some pretty good line mates on the power play, and his issues are still there on the power play. He has just got no confidence with the puck. He's not being decisive with his decisions. He looks like he's got the yips, double clutching, taking forever to get his shots off. And here's the thing. We've seen this before from Petey. We've seen exactly this. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills sometimes when I hear people's analysis of Petey's play. This is exactly what happened a couple of years ago when he hit rock bottom in Carolina. Mm-hmm. And he came out of that eventually, and he said, I've learned a bunch of things, you know, and he talked about, I remember an interview he did with Drancer for The Athletic, and I was reading it last night, and he goes, everyone likes the attention when you play well, but I've just learned, or not learned, but I've realized that the more I think about what other people think, the more I look at social media, and he trailed off in his conversation, Drance says, and he said, when I got here, everything was so big compared to what I was used to back home. Now I'm not focusing on it too much. I know if I play well and if I help this team win, that's all that matters. It's great when people say good things about you, but it doesn't really matter compared to the guys in the locker room. So this was all between the ears. This was all a confidence issue. And I think maybe it might not be the exact same thing, but I think it's all between the ears with Petey right now. He is in a spiral of sorts, and it's coming at the wrong time.
Let's hear more now on Elias Pettersson from his head coach. This is Rick Tocchet speaking at length about number 40 following a 4-1 loss to the Nashville Predators in Game 2 of their opening round series on Tuesday night.
Well, I think, P, like the team, I think there's times we're not decisive. Like when you got that puck and you beat pressure, it's downhill and it's everybody and it's shot on net, people in net. And for whatever reason, you know, and we had some of those, but then we deferred, tried to throw a cross ice pass, or you know, in reference to Petey's a young kid, you know, this is his first kind of taste of pressure playoff thing, and you know, this is good for him. He's got to learn that, you know, he's got to dust himself off and be ready for Game 3, And he's got to be very decisive with the puck. I want to see him shoot the puck. Like, he's got to take it. Like, and I think he'll be fine. I mean, this is good for him. Good learning lesson.
Good learning lesson. So there's a lot to unpack there.
Feel good for him. It doesn't feel like this is all good for him. Maybe he's going to learn something from it.
Tockett's got nothing else to say at this point.
Yeah.
Nothing else to say. There's nothing good that can come from trying to hyperanalyze. He did offer some suggestions to the young man. Like, one of them was like, you just need to take it. You just need to shoot more.
Don't miss three empty nets.
But here's the thing.
I think the best word that Tockett used was, and this goes for all the Canucks, like, they weren't being decisive with their decisions. You could feel them trying to think their way through what the Preds are doing. What the Preds are doing is just fronting the puck, right? You're going to hear that. Be prepared for this phrase to hear a lot. You're probably going to hear Drantz talking about it a lot, too, if you haven't already heard about it. So, basically, when you're defending in hockey, you almost got two options. You can front the puck, which is kind of trying to it's getting in front of the puck, whether it's shooting lanes or passing lanes, or you can do like the box out method, which is, right? Like, you let your goalie see the shots in some cases, and then you just box guys out and you make sure that you, first of all, your goalie that sees the puck, but also that you take a man, right? Mm-hmm. So if there's a rebound, that guy isn't going to get it. So how you beat a fronting team is, you need to find passing lanes and shooting lanes, and that's puck movement, and that's being decisive, that's being quick. If you've got an open shooting lane, shoot the puck. And then oftentimes what's going to happen is, because the Preds are fronting it or the other team is fronting it, they're not boxing out. So oftentimes you're going to get a guy all alone in front of the net, right? So, like, Dakota Joshua nearly – like, when he hit the post in the third period, like, that was an example of the type of goals that they can score, because he's wide open in front of the net. There's a loose puck there, he should have scored there, but, you know, he was being checked a little bit, and he just couldn't sweep the puck into the net.
So the problem that I had with that analysis when I heard Tockett said it, and then hearing you explain it too, is when you talk about the reluctance to shoot and the indecisiveness, I said, but they had 84 shot attempts. If anything, they knew exactly what they wanted to do with the puck, and there wasn't really any...
Taking too much time, though. Like, okay. If you see the PD shots that he took, it's oftentimes he has the puck, and he's trying by himself almost to create a shooting lane.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, and the times he didn't shoot the puck, like the time he tried to fire that pass to Garland, he had a shooting lane open. And it's just, he's taking too much time with the puck, and... You know, and that is that's a confidence issue, right? You don't feel right. It's almost like he feels like he needs to feel the puck first before he shoots it, instead of just getting it and ripping it.
From one coach to another, we go back now to Rick Tockett, speaking about the reluctant nature of his team and how his team can't be reluctant in these moments. Tockett following last night's loss. Here we go.
Yeah, because we didn't get the puck to the net. Like, we were, you know, I felt it halfway through the game. Actually, Dakota and Garza started to do it, which they yet never do, is, you know, they're trying to make plays in the middle. When if we go north, that's when you get teams in trouble. We're reluctant. I don't know if they thought it was going to be easy because we had all this possession time. Not those two guys, I'm saying the team in general. But, it was low. What is it, four shots each after the first period? It wasn't much, right? I thought we were reluctant to shoot the puck the first period. Really reluctant, and it's something that you got to have. Footy said after the game, you know, it's a learning lesson for these guys. You got to take what's there. Don't force something that's not there.
And there was a lot of forcing of the puck, and it wasn't just Petey, because I don't think it's fair to just pick on him, although he was a big part of it. JT Miller was throwing the puck away like he does sometimes when he gets frustrated. There's some bad passes on the power play. There's some just bad passes overall. Here's the frustrating thing about last night.
All of it.
Because they should have won the game with how they looked out there and all the possession that they have. And you look at the mistakes they made on the goals against. I mean, those are avoidable mistakes. Just starting with the first goal. I mean, Quinn Hughes falling and... Mm-hmm. You know, Casey DeSmith overcommitting, so when I say they should have won the game, I mean, they shouldn't have, because they did make those mistakes. But, you watch this game and you're thinking the Canucks are a better team than Nashville, right? Like overall. So I still, you know, if I'm picking this series, I'm still picking the Preds to win, the Canucks to win this series, even with Casey DeSmith in net. But they're going to have to find a way to create goals. And Tocchet said, listen, there's a plan in place that I don't really want to talk about. Like, we do have a plan to beat the Preds' defensive style, but we've just got to execute it.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I think you saw most of it last night. I think that there was something stylistically that
I don't think you did if you asked Rick Tocchet.
I think his biggest issue is with the execution. I think that the plan was in place. I think that they did enough possession. Possession accumulation, that's not the right phrasing. But they possessed the puck enough and they generated enough opportunities that they should have had more than one goal on the board. I mean, we're okay.
Oh, of course.
Well, the shots they got a net also, Saros was terrific.
Can focus on the missed shots and the block shots, but there was also three or four not good, glorious chances.
Yes.
Suter, Joshua, take your pick, that should have been in the back of the net.
Pettersson.
Mm-hmm. Those three in particular.
Yeah.
Those three go in, and those are... And
Lafferty had a breakaway.
Right, yeah. And Lafferty didn't even get a shot on net.
Yeah, exactly.
That. So those chances alone, that's a 4-3 hockey game. So, I understand what he's talking about the reluctance to shoot and the execution not being great. They have more than enough. If I'm Nashville right now, I'm probably more... I'm puzzled about what exactly we are in this series.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's no way that they played that style in game two at any time during the regular season. Like, they had nothing going forward. They had a fluky bounce in the first period. They had a great moment of individual skill and a mistake from the Canucks on the Forsberg goal. And then another mistake. So they pounced opportunistically on those two chances, right? And the deflection was just, it was a freak play. And DeSmith was not good. By the way, I disagree with the DeSmith thing. That's a problem for me. And it's not just the puck stopping. He looks like he has zero confidence.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm talking about handling the puck. And I know that they spot shadowed it during the first intermission, where even the most innocuous plays to set up his blue liners with the simplest of passes was like, let's throw it right into his skates.
It was just a horrible way to start.
How can
game,
I bank this off the dasher? Like, it was all over the place, right?
Mm-hmm. And off the name chant, no less. I mean, you couldn't have ridden that up. Like, it was just ridiculous.
And I don't necessarily blame him for looking.
It's not helping my confidence.
No.
The crowd is chanting my name.
Yeah.
Oh, it's right behind
As soon as that happened, it felt like the first thing, I actually said it out loud to myself watching the game. As soon as that happens, like, oh, it's going to be one of those games.
Maybe
like,
distracted
everything
him.
Goes against
He's
you.
He's a 32-year-old journeyman goalie that's probably never had his name chanted by 18,000 people before in anticipation of what's probably one of the biggest starts of his career.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't blame him for being nervous and having the yips. But at the same time, and I've said this all year, I consider there to be a canyon-sized gap between the level that Demko can play up to and the level that DeSmith can play up to.
Well, yeah, 100%.
Secondly,
I don't think that's a hot take at all.
It's not. Secondly, this team, and it's baked into the recipe and it's part of the fabric of the team, is having outstanding goaltending. It's part of their identity. I would have said that Demko was 1B behind Hughes for MVP this year, all due respect to JT Miller. That was my assessment on it. And I think that we saw it, not just in terms of wins and losses, but the way the team played in front, how they feel when Demko's in net as opposed to when they feel how Seelovs or DeSmith. For those of you about to text in to the Dunbar Lumber text line, I am not putting that loss last night on DeSmith. These are two separate conversations. I'm using the hand gestures and everything. These are two separate conversations I'm having. You do not blame him for the loss last night. I'm not sure how far they can go with him in that. Do you understand? You guys understand that?
Yeah, yeah.
In listener land, do you get that?
I understand that. Yeah, text in your thoughts and comments, 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at dunbarlumber.com. Very simple question coming in right now. Do we know if Demko is out long? From what we're hearing,
he ain't coming back this series.
He ain't coming back for this series. And, from what I've heard, I'd be surprised if he's back for the next series as well, which is really, and maybe the playoffs, right?
Tocchet said he was week to week yesterday, by the way, in case you want the
this
official.
This is my nightmare.
Yeah.
That was Rick Tocchet. The official designation last night post game. We won't play the clip because it was 5 seconds long. It's like Demers week to week. too weak.
You know, and you know, I still think the Canucks should get by the Preds. I'm not saying they will. I think they should. And while that's doable against Nashville with DeSmith in net, I'm not sure I like their chances if they advance and meet the Oilers in the next round. Yes, I know DeSmith beat Edmonton very recently, but the Oilers didn't have McDavid for that game. And McDavid, I don't know if you watched game one against the Kings, fairly big part of that team.
Yep.
I find it a little hard to believe that this injury was not at all related to the injury that kept Demko out for weeks down the stretch. I know Tockett says it wasn't the old injury, and that's all I've really got for you guys. That would be extremely unlucky if that were the case.
And Did you see the clip of him supposedly when he got injured? He wasn't doing much last minute of the game.
Yeah,
it wasn't doing much.
Sure, looked like a re-aggravation or something.
Well, it may not be exactly the same injury, but you know, when you're doing rehab of a knee, sometimes you can focus on one area and then you're compensating, and another part of the knee goes. I'd just be surprised if it wasn't somehow related. And remember that the Canucks were very open with the fact that Demko had to work extremely hard in order to be back for the second last game of the season against Calgary. Demko said himself that that was the game they targeted all along. Now, I'm not saying that the Canucks or anyone, the medical staff, were irresponsible in rushing Demko back to play, but they did have to rush him back. I mean, they kind of acknowledged that. They were talking about how hard Demko worked just to get back in time to play a couple of games to get ready for the playoffs. I'm sure he would have been out longer if it was, you know, November or December, but they needed to target a game and they didn't want to go him in cold into the playoffs without any games. So they targeted that Calgary game. They worked really hard to get him back. Mm-hmm. He did look good.
He looked great in his first three games back.
He did.
This is hockey. I don't even have a problem with any of this. You don't think Demko wanted to come back as soon as
possible? Of course
he
did. Yeah. He's not like, well, we'll just probably take it pretty casually.
For those of you throwing out that the Canucks are cursed, like, I appreciate the narrative and everything, but here's the other thing. The Canucks were unbelievably lucky all season when it came to health. They had no major injuries to any of their star players until Demko got hurt with about a month left in the season. Even that didn't really matter, because they had already sewn up a playoff spot. This is what happens. This is what happens. It's unfortunate that it happened in that particular position, because the goalie position is a lot more unique when it comes to, well, next man up. But it happens, and it is, unfortunately, what it is. Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by All Seasons Roofing. Sun, rain, wind, or snow, All Seasons Roofing has you covered with end-to-end roofing services. A lot of roofing in this read. For your free quote, visit allseasonsroofing.ca. Jeff Merrick is coming up next. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
.634 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Jeff Merrick, host of the Jeff Merrick Show and the 32 Thoughts podcast, is going to join us here in just a moment. The highlight of hour one. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling, Vancouver's premier metal recycler. Pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. To the phone lines we go. Jeff Merrick joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Jeff. How are you?
I'm well. If I'm the Nashville Predators, I'm making sure I don't lose the recipe for ice.
Oh, man.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. That was one of the many takeaways last night. Final total was 732 block shots last night. So good on the Preds for doing that. Jeff, there are so many things that we need to discuss about the Canucks. Not even necessarily about that game last night. Just the general sense right now between the Demko injury and the Myers flu and the way that game last night is frustration. Can you feel it? Can you feel us? Frustration, Jeff. There's a lot of frustration after that game last night.
Oh, yeah, I can understand. Like, that is that's a suffocating game to play. First of all, as you mentioned, there's the Demko news. And I don't know about you, but when I hear week to week, not day to day, I don't get any soap and warm water feeling about it. But well, I suppose to stand by to find out here about the Demko situation. And I think that sort of cast a shadow over everything. Like, listen, Casey DeSmith had a wonderful season. Playoffs are a different beast. It's not just can you do it physically, it's can you do it mentally, especially with that position. Like, I've long said, and I think I've bored you guys with this line as well, too, the two hardest jobs in Canada are as follows. Number one, prime minister. Number two, starting goaltender for a Canadian hockey team. And add the spice of in the playoffs. And add another bit of spice of when the number one goaltender comes down, goes down, and you're expected to do something in the postseason. So I think that sort of casts a shadow over everything. The Myers situation is disappointing. I thought he was really good in game one. I really did. So that's a real tough one for the Vancouver Canucks. You know, there's Elias Pettersson gripping it too much. I think we're all still wondering how he missed that yawning cage yesterday, but there it was. And then, like, handed to the Nashville Predators. Like, that's a really good team. I thought the UC Saros played really well. They waited. They were patient. They capitalized on their opportunities. And more than anything else, they frustrated the Vancouver Canucks by blocking everything that was directed at the net. Now, for me, the question becomes, you can do that, but how many times can you do that? I know playoffs are all about punishment and suck it up and blocking shots and body on the line, the whole deal. Can you do, like, if that's the recipe to beat the Vancouver Canucks, you're playing with fire and you're, you know, flirting with injuries on your own team here. It's a great way to win a game. I just don't know if you can win a series playing that way.
What are you seeing from Elias Pettersson right now? Because I think it's important to note, and Jason pointed this out in the intro, he's not invisible right now. He's very visible.
Last night he was invisible. He was very visible last night.
So you can't say that it's a disappearing act. What are you seeing from Elias Pettersson right now?
A guy that's trying to probably do too much. A guy that's feeling the weight of responsibility in the postseason here. Like, there's a few players around the league that are really starting to feel it, even though we're only two games in. I mean, you have to figure Connor Hellebuck is feeling it in Winnipeg. You know that Mitch Marner is feeling it in Toronto. You strongly suspect, you know, that Jay Gottinger knows what the whispers are all about in Dallas. Like, there's already a number of Alexander Ovechkin, who yesterday he got a shot on goal, but that's about all that he did in that loss against the Rangers. And even his, you know, even his coach is coming out and saying, like, something's off with Ovechkin. He's fighting it right now. So Elias Pettersson isn't the only one. But, no, he's not invisible. He's still getting his chances. Whenever I see that, I look at it and just say, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And eventually, you know, the floodgates open and Elias Pettersson starts to get on the board and starts to pile up points. I don't think that he's, like, I'll compare him to Ovechkin here. You know, Ovechkin's, like, not even in the play. Or Ovechkin's, like, you know, standing beside the net doing statue practice or elevator practice, just kind of standing there, non-factor. You know, Ovechkin's been, like, bluntly awful. I don't see that with Elias Pettersson. I still see someone that's working for chances, working to do something. You know, whenever your number one goaltender goes down, I mean, whether you're Quinn Hughes or JT Miller, or in this case, Elias Pettersson, you maybe try to overcompensate a little bit and say, okay, Demko's out. I need to do that much more. I'm not in between the ears of Elias Pettersson, so I can't tell you if that's how he's thinking. But I agree. I don't think that he's removed from the play. He's still engaged in the play. And I look at Pettersson and I say, you know, it's only a matter of time before this guy starts to go off.
How do you beat a team that defends like Nashville does, fronting the puck? You know, you can see the Canucks are almost thinking while they're doing it. You know, I think one of the issues that Pettersson has against a fronting team, and you might have to stick with me here, is that he's not feeling super confident making quick decisions with the puck, and that's like the worst kind of, I guess, thing to have against the Nashville Predators, because when you do have the opportunity, when a shooting lane does open up, you have to take advantage of it real quick, and you have to be, and Tuck had used the word, decisive with the puck. And you know, you can't just shoot. You can't just say, and JT Miller was sitting there after the game, and you know, he's kind of a little defiant with the reporters. He's like, well, guys, you can't just shoot it, because then you're going to shoot it right into the Nashville Predators, and that's their whole plan. So how do you beat a team like the Nashville Predators with the defense playing the way it is?
It's got to be puck movement in the offensive zone, right? Like that's the way you do it. Like, you're right, they've got guys, and there's, you know, layers upon layers of players, and it's led by Ryan McDonagh. And this is where, you know, everyone always said, like, the one player that Tampa could never afford to lose was Ryan McDonagh, because how do you replace that? And it's the old Mark Bergevin line, right? Like, some guys get you there, some guys get you through. And Ryan McDonagh's the guy that gets you through, and you see that in the postseason. You see that right now. As far as how do you beat it? I mean, what's the old cliche? Goals go right to your feet, right? I think it's a matter of, like, the first goal seems crucial in this series, especially if you're the Vancouver Canucks and you're kind of squeezing it a little bit here. I think the way you do it, though, and again, easier said than done. You know, set a guy, you know, thousands of miles away here is puck moving in the offensive zone. Like, you have to keep your feet moving, keep them guessing, keep them moving. And again, the thing about UC Saros is, and this is what a lot of teams will tell you, and that's why they always defer to large netminders here. UC Saros, all the saves he makes, he has to actually make them. Now, stick with me on the logic here. He has to make every single save that he makes. When you're a small goaltender, you have to do that. When you're a big goalie, sometimes you just make accidental saves, and the puck just goes off you because you're big. So, you know, UC Saros doesn't have that luxury. And I know JT Miller is saying, like, look, I'm not going to take a low percentage shot, because that's essentially just, you know, handing the Nashville Predators a turnover. But I do wonder the logic of, with a smaller netminder who is not able to make an accidental save, I do wonder if there is some wisdom here in, you know, more east-west play in the offensive zone and just volume shooting, knowing that if he's going to make a save, he has to really make a save. There can't be any accidental saves with UC Saros because he's not big enough.
We're speaking to Jeff Merrick, host of the Jeff Merrick Show and the 32 Thoughts podcast here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Speaking of the pod, Jeff, this is how hard Jeff and Elliot work. After the Canucks game last night, you guys recorded a late night overnight car cast for the 32 Thoughts podcast. And it begins with...
I like that, car cast.
Car cast. Straight from the explanation here. Friedman expands on the Thatcher Demko injury. What did Freed have to say?
I'm trying to remember. It was like at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Just like 3 hours ago for you.
We did that one. It was. It really wasn't. But like, when you're as sleep deprived as I am right now driving in, on the Demko injury, I think he referenced Farhan's report about the knee. I mean, I don't want to misspeak Elliot here.
Yep.
So I don't want to say exactly what he said, because to be honest with you, it was in the wee hours and I can't recall. I think we're all concerned though about, you know, week to week and not day to day.
Yeah.
But I don't want to try to remember what Elliot said here and misspeak for him.
Hey, Jeff, let's talk on a couple other things non-Canucks related.
Sure.
Are we getting the full story on what's happening with A, Evander Kane in Edmonton, and B, William Nylander in Toronto?
Well, I think Evander Kane was, like, kind of surprising, just sort of blurted out, yeah, I've been fighting a sports hernia. Like, whoa, okay, like, I appreciate the honesty. Like, that's wonderful. But we don't expect it around this time of year. To me, the William Nylander thing is, and I go back and forth on Elliot with this one, like, he thinks the Maple Leafs, you know, mishandled what's happened to Nylander, but the phenomenon around him. and, you know, all the conversation around him. And he related it to Gabriel Landeskog on the podcast and said, like, look, the Avalanche have been up front with everybody about this one and said, like, he's not going to be available here. He's not going to be available there. Like, don't get your hopes up for Gabriel Landeskog. This is still something that he's fighting for, even though he's on the ice. Now, don't expect to see Gabriel Landeskog. And, like, first of all, nobody wants anybody to guess here. Like, that's the worst possible thing. But then when you have a lack of information around it, what else can people do? Like, oh, it's a suspension. Oh, it's a broken hand. Oh, it's something with his back. Oh, it's a injury from playing sewer ball. Like, nobody really knows. But when you don't put out any information or feed the beast, this is what happens. These are the types of rumors that get out there. Now, I think this is one that whether it's, the Maple Leafs mishandling this or they should have played this one differently, because I do think that there's obviously a huge piece of the story that we're not getting here, and we should probably be comfortable with that around playoff time. But I think this is one that we can only judge either when he's back and we find out what the issue was, or at the end of the playoff run where sort of all the secrets come out. And all of a sudden, every coach suddenly takes truth serum. So, like, I'm uncomfortable speculating on what this is. But as far as, the mystery of what's wrong with William Nylander, let me take it from this point of view.
Okay.
I thought wrongly, mistakenly, and this may change, I mistakenly thought that as the NHL cozies up to various gambling companies, and it's very much part of the NHL vocabulary now, and it's very much part of the presentation. There's the event, there's the editorial, and there's the interaction, and the interaction, a lot of it revolves around wagering. I thought as the NHL cozied up to sports gambling that there would be a mandate, even at playoff time, to be more specific about injuries and player availability.
Same.
I could not have been more wrong on that one. Mm-hmm. But that's really how I thought. Like, okay, if you want people to gamble their money on your sport, you probably should arm them with enough information that they feel they can make an educated, they can make an educated guess on who's going to win or lose a hockey game. And in this situation specifically, nobody knows if William Nylander is playing tonight. So you're wagering on Game 3, Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs. How do you judge where you should put your money if you don't know either the nature of an injury or whether a player is coming back? But again, I was way off on that one, and it's just the song remains the same. And until either Nylander returns or the Maple Leafs are ousted, I don't think we're going to get any information. But only then, I think, can we judge if something shady is going on here, because it does feel like obviously like we're something's off here, and we're not. It's more. I think it's more than just, well, they're not being forthcoming with the William Nylander information because they don't give away injury information at this time of year.
Here's one thing you can always wager on: Jeff Merrick will show
okay.
up. Jeff Merrick will show up to play, no matter how tired.
Oh, geez.
He could be driving, sleet, snow. No, it doesn't matter. Jeff Merrick's always here.
No, listen, I can't even remember what my partner said last night on the podcast, and that was like 5 minutes ago. I am failing at doing my job.
When I heard
I have no idea what Halford says every day, and I'm sitting right next to him.
He didn't even know what I just said about you. He's like, Jeff Merrick's playing tonight? He said, we got the news. We're like, Merrick's going to consume all the hockey last night till the wee hours. Then he's going to record a podcast. Then he's going to come on your show in the morning. That's a gamer. So, Jeff, we'll let you go. Thanks a lot for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Best of luck. Go get some coffee. We'll talk to you soon.
Listen, it beats working for a living. I don't have to lift anything heavy. As my wife always reminds me, show up. All you do is talk about what other people did. You don't actually do anything yourself. You just talk about all the things that other people did. At least you can do is show up. I have no argument against that, guys.
Very well said, Jeff. Very well said.
Thanks, thanks, honey.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, hon. See you later.
Have a good one, Jeff.
See you, buddy.
See you, boys. Be good.
Jeff Merrick, host of the 32 Thoughts podcast and the Jeff Merrick Show here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We let Jeff go because even though he does talk about what other people do, for a living. They put in some crazy hours, admittedly. Right? When you're recording a podcast at like 1 o'clock in the morning and then doing radio hits a few hours after, we appreciate that. One of the things I wanted to ask Jeff about that Toronto series, the headline from the Toronto Sun, God, you know what? Even though it's salacious and at times a little greasy, I love a good tabloid headline.
Love the tabloid.
Love a tabloid. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Love a tabloid. Laddie's just looking at us with disgust.
Mm-hmm. Under no circumstance do you have to hand it to the tabloids.
So the Toronto Sun, which employs among
the GOAT medal winner.
Yeah, right? You're looking at it. It's in a newspaper box. It's staring you in the face. It's got a big picture.
We don't really get that anymore in Vancouver. Like the sports page of the province isn't what it used to be. Sorry, guys. Up your game. Let's go.
It makes me sad that the kids today aren't going to get to walk down the street and see what a big, big, annoying, obnoxious tabloid headline on the newspaper looks like. So in the Toronto,
that was like
Sun,
the clickbait of the pre-internet era.
That's
like
exactly
you
what
see
it
the
was.
Tabloid headline, you're like, oh, this makes me angry. I'm buying this paper now.
Yeah, I've got a quarter. I'm going to buy this.
I'm going to hate read this.
I'm going to figure out how this machine works. I'm going to take like 10 newspapers here. These are all free.
You remember what you used to do if you didn't like the headline? Is you'd open up the newspaper box, you'd take all the newspapers, and you'd throw them in the garbage, and you're like, that's what I think of that newspaper.
See, we got to take it one step further and get the kids on the street again going, extra, extra. Yeah. Okay, those guys.
Anyway, tell the listeners what the headline was.
The Toronto Sun, a Toronto-based tabloid, which employs, among others, Steve Simmons, has an article. And so the back page art is great. It's Mitch Marner as the invisible man, right? So they've taken Mitch Marner's face out, and it's invisible. And the headline is, Mitch Marner stars as the invisible man in the Leafs series versus the Bruins. It's a cheap shot, it's over the top, and it is hilarious.
Isn't the series tied going back to Toronto?
This is the headline? Mitch Marner last year in the playoffs had 14 points in 11 games. You could say that he might have underwhelmed because he only had 3 goals, or that the Leafs were disappointing.
It was a Florida series, really. You know, that was...
Sure, but, I mean, it's gratuitous and it's over the top, and I don't want to say tongue-in-cheek because I don't think that's the right phrasing for it. Like, this is, I mean, they're fairly serious, right? But it is like, who's the most obvious guy that we can kick here?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the invisible man, Mitch Marner. Now, as someone that would love to see the Leafs lose in this series and every series for the rest of time, I find it, like, enjoyable, but in a gallows humor kind of way. I know that fans locally are like, this is trash, this is disgusting, this makes me sick, right? I understand the nuance of it, but...
We've got a couple good media rivalries going on right now because we got Steve Simmons versus Mitch Marner in Toronto, and we got Mark Spector versus Evander Kane in Edmonton.
Right, and this is all part of the playoffs too, right? Like these, you know, every game because it becomes its own little theater act where it's like, well, who showed up tonight? Who did well? Who didn't? And then you sit there and you write your reviews afterwards. The reason I bring up the Marner Invisible Man thing is that you can see where the Pettersson narrative is going here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, last night, it added a different chapter, but for different reasons, like we said, like, Pettersson was not in the invisible man last night. Pettersson was the visible man. Visibly frustrating. Like, if you want a visual representation of frustration, watching Pettersson play last night might have been it, because it was missing nets, shooting when you should be passing, passing when you should be shooting,
Turnover
to make it 3-1. The forlorn look to the sky when you miss an open net by a couple of inches. It had it all.
Mm-hmm.
The great theater, not in a good way, but great theater. And you're going to start to see and hear those. And kudos to you, because I think you did a really nice job this morning of not just piling on the guy, which is
easy. People were like, you're going to go Mount Bruff on Elias Pettersson. I actually felt bad for the guy last night. Like, he is just in one. And we've seen... I mean, I've been watching sports for a long, long time, and I've seen guys go through. I've seen Pettersson go through this before.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? One like really stands out. Do you remember Josh Hamilton? It was the Texas Rangers.
Former Texas Rangers slugger,
yeah,
Josh Hamilton.
Like, he was one of the best hitters in the game, and then he had like that stretch where he could not put the bat on the ball.
Yep.
I've seen it a ton with golfers. We've seen it with goalies getting yippy. We've seen it with pitchers that can't find the strike zone anymore. All the magic that you used to have is gone, and every decision you seem to make is the wrong one.
Yeah.
And Pettersson said afterwards, like, nobody is a bigger critic than myself. And here's the thing.
We're about to find out.
Well, hold on a sec. Like, I can make a cheap joke and go, well, you haven't been in my head. But like, that's part of the problem.
Yeah, that's like, fair.
It is. It is reminiscent of Luongo in Vancouver, where I think he got in his head at times.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I always go back to an interview I did with Jonathan Toews in the Stanley Cup Finals. And I asked him, what do you think about before a big game? And his answer was just so perfectly said, hopefully nothing.
Right.
Right? And I'm fascinated by the mental side of the game, as I think most people are that watch sports. They try and empathize with these players. They can't do what they can physically, but they wonder how they would act if they could and if they were in that position. And what would you think if your game all of a sudden just left you and you'd been able to do all these magical things before and you'd been in games? So like, you know how we talked with Kessler yesterday and he was like, you know, against the Nashville series, I just felt physically and mentally the best I ever have. And I felt like whenever I shot the puck, it was going to go in and I was anticipating perfectly. Well, there's an opposite end of the spectrum to that. There's what happens when that disappears from your game and all of a sudden you're like, I can't do anything right out there. How am I going to get out of this? And I think that's what's happening with Pettersson right now. And that's why I say I feel like I'm taking crazy pills sometimes when I read people's analysis and they go to analytics for Pettersson and they, you know, they say, like, you know, defensively he's playing well. And I'm like, guys, just watch the games. Just watch the look on his face. Try and empathize with the player. Look at listen to what he's actually saying and watch him play. He's going through something mentally right now. And if you can't see that, then you're not watching closely enough. So we'll talk more about this on the other side. I really want to hear your thoughts into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. We do, I believe, have an open segment on the other side. Then we're going to get to Robbie Stanley, talk about things from the Pred side. But I really want to get your thoughts on all of the issues facing the Vancouver Canucks, because there are quite a few of them right now.
Canucks playoff coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by All Seasons Roofing. Sun, rain, wind, or snow, All Seasons Roofing has you covered with end-to-end roofing services. For your free quote, visit allseasonsroofing.ca. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.